Well, it's Friday. We've made it through another week. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, and it just so happens to be my show. The phone number, if you want to be a part of it, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. It is Open Line Friday, of course, so you can call in and be a little more flexible. In fact, we've got one caller calling in at the bottom of the hour. The Senate Democrats from Washington, D.C. invaded the state of Georgia the other day and did a sob story Democrat-packed panel on how the Georgia voting law is bad. They're headed to Texas to do one there as well. The governor of the state of Georgia, Brian Kemp, is going to join me at the bottom of the hour to talk about the Democrats. You know, they're saying that it was secret meetings. The law was passed in secret. Yet all the Democrats in the Georgia legislature who testified apparently showed up at the meeting. We'll talk to him about that. I got a new example of how systemically racist the United States of America is. You know, the systemic racism in this country, it's so appalling. LeBron James, according to CBS News, is becoming the first player in NBA history to make $1 billion in earnings while still playing. LeBron James is probably probably the most insufferable player in the NBA, wants to lecture the rest of us on crimes against humanity and how terrible the United States is, keeps his mouth shut about China because he's making money from there. And the United States of America is so systemically racist that LeBron James is only going to be able to make $1 billion in earnings while still playing. From CBS News, fresh off Space Jam, A New Legacy, which, by the way, my kid saw. He saw the original one, and then he watched this one. And he described the new one as your friend's dad trying to be cool on TikTok because his kid is cool on TikTok. That's the way my kid described the new one, Space Jam, A New Legacy, universally derided as an awful movie. It opened to $31 million at the box office. LeBron James got even richer from it. The four-time champion is just announced as the first NBA player to make $1 billion in career earnings while still playing. That's no small feat, and it's a testament to the diversity in projects and endorsements James has his hands in off the court. LeBron earned $330 million in playing salary since getting drafted in 2003, while bringing in a whopping $700 million through endorsements, merchandise, licensing, and media. His endorsements with AT&T, Beats, Blaze Pizza, GMC, PepsiCo, Rimowa, and Walmart bring in over $100 million annually alone. That's on top of the gobs of money he makes through his partnership with Nike, which he signed a lifetime deal with back in 2016. It brings in $30 million annually on its own. He's also the sixth athlete globally to reach the billion-dollar mark, a list that includes Tiger Woods, Floyd Mayweather, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, and Roger Federer. Our nation is so systemically racist that LeBron could only earn $1 billion. If we weren't a systemically racist nation, he could earn way more than that. You know, maybe he should go to China where they're not systemically racist at all, allegedly, and he could earn so much more there. The Olympics have officially started. I know we will all, well, I will. I got no use for it this year. This is the first year I always watch the opening. I don't even have a desire to watch the opening ceremonies this year. There is no crowd. There are no fans. The Japanese, one of the athletes is still a nursing mother, and the Japanese prohibited her from allowing her child to come with her to the Olympics. And they've started they're ahead of us. And so they've already had the opening ceremonies. The flame is already lit and ratings are expected to be down. Now I find this very funny. Frank Pallotta at CNN Business. This may be the lowest rated Olympics ever. NBC shouldn't sweat it. That's the spin. The Summer Olympics, one of the most watched events worldwide, officially kicks off in Tokyo this weekend after being delayed a year because of the pandemic. NBC hopes pent-up demand will drive sports fans to their TVs, laptops, and phones to tune in. But traditional TV viewership of this year's games faces a set of challenges that could land the Tokyo Olympics in a ratings hole. This is probably going to be the lowest rated Summer Olympics of all time, says Patrick Crakes, a former Fox Sports executive turned media consultant. They can't avoid the increased media fractionalization that's enabled everyone to spend more time with all sorts of content. The good news for NBC is it doesn't need to rely exclusively on old-fashioned TV ratings to make money on the Olympics. Streaming and digital platforms provide viewers with more ways to watch the Olympics than ever. Live events, highlights, interviews, stories, and other shareable clips. That's why this Olympics could see its viewership fall to a record low in traditional TV, even as you may get eyeballs. I don't need, is there excitement for the Olympics? I don't really know a lot of people. I'm on lots of email lists with lots of people, all of whom are actually way more interested in sports than I am. And I, not a single one of them, the only excitement is whether or not the U.S. women's soccer team loses, which everyone seems to be rooting for. Other than that, I don't know that there's a great deal of excitement about any of the athletes. And, you know, part of this, if we're fair about it, you do have the Simone Biles thing. And she's, I guess, the big known star. Somebody, and I can't remember who it was, but some wise person did point out one of the big differences between this Olympics and others is that, with the exception of the women's soccer team, who everyone is tired of, we don't really have a bunch of major athletes who have built up some sort of fan base over time who are going to be there. Michael Phelps is not swimming. Who are the others? There have been named stars and personalities who over time people took an interest in through media campaigns, advertising, endorsement deals, and the like, and they're not really going to be there. So people are going to have to build up names of younger stars. And, you know, that's one of the ironies here. I talked about this the other day, or yesterday, I guess it was yesterday. You know, I mentioned yesterday, I was perfectly fine with the U.S. women's soccer team losing. You root against America. I root against you. They root against America. But I find it fascinating. There are multiple pieces now that have come out, and they have all said, on background, nobody wants to go on record, on background saying that the problem here is the women's soccer team for the U.S. has become a thing, and it's now working against them because they're too old. And you can't be ageist. You don't want to be ageist. You don't want to be accused of that. But the other teams have younger players. The American soccer team has gotten old, and yet they've become this iconic team for progressives. Progressive Americans love to root for the American women's soccer team now. And so you can't get rid of Megan Rapinoe and the others. They become iconic for a certain class of people, an annoyance for most Americans, but yet they're known. You can't get rid of them, and they can't compete against the younger athletes. And so what do you do? American soccer allowing these women to build up their brand to become some sort of iconic annoyance for the free world has now seen American women's soccer dive into the ground because they can't compete against the younger athletes. I was actually talking to someone last night who said he just doesn't pay attention to women's soccer, that he is definitely center left, but he says women's soccer is completely different from men's soccer, and it kind of annoys him. Everybody wants to treat it differently. The athleticism and the play of the game, the pace of the game, and the like, they're completely different, and he just doesn't pay attention to it. And, you know, he's right. On top of that now, though, you add in the younger players versus the American soccer team, and you get a weird dynamic. And then, of course, you've got the ratings down anyway. Will anyone pay attention? No one paid attention to Joe Biden. My gosh, speaking of terrible ratings, CNN's, this is from Fox News, you know they're gloating over this. CNN's Joe Biden town hall flops, finishes behind Fox News, MSNBC with only 1.5 million viewers. Fox News beat CNN by a staggering 83%, during the Biden town hall. Now, this is from Fox News. They're gloating. But, you know, I told you guys, it was remarkable to me that the Biden town hall news was buried on CNN.com's own website. They spent more time attacking Republicans than they did promoting. They had an exclusive town hall with the sitting president of the United States, and CNN buried coverage of it by four people. Hang on, because I got the screenshot of it. I want to be precise in my times of when did I get the screenshot of this? It was by 1:49 p.m. on CNN's website yesterday. Keep in mind, the town hall was night before last. So yesterday, they should have gone full bore coverage of it. Yesterday, at CNN.com at 1:49 p.m., the top story was not all Republicans embrace McConnell's vaccine push. The Biden town hall story had been replaced by massive internet outage, briefly takes down corporate sites. There was judge forces U.S. Capitol rioter to unlock laptop seized by FBI. And fury in Congress as GOP hides Trump's crimes. There was no mention of the Biden town hall above the fold at CNN by 1:51 p.m. I said 1:49. It's 1:51 and 49 seconds. That's when I took the screenshot. And by the way, the trending topics at CNN up at the top, Anna Faris eloped, China floods, and Bobby Bowden. And the latest news, Mexico versus France and opening ceremony of Olympic Games. There was literally no mention of Joe Biden's town hall at CNN.com at 2 o'clock in the afternoon the day after it happened. There was not CNN coverage of it. There was nothing. I mean, how could you cover it, though? It was very clear that Joe Biden got worn out and Don Lemon was insufferable. It's kind of remarkable that CNN did not want to give any coverage to its own town hall. Again, it is worth playing this clip. I may play this clip every day for the rest of my life. Mr. President, when will children under 12 be able to get vaccinated?
That's underway, just like the other question that's illogical. And I've heard you speak about it because you always, I'm not being solicitous, but you're always straight up about what you're doing. And the question is whether or not we should be in a position where you are. Why can't the experts say we know that this virus is in fact it's going to be we know why all the drugs approved are not temporarily approved but permanently approved.
That's when you've got to turn him off, unplug him, bang on his side, blow in where the disk drive goes, where the disk goes, and plug him back in and reboot. That's the president of the United States at the town hall. Maybe there's a reason CNN doesn't want to promote its own town hall with the president of the United States. This is embarrassing. My goodness gracious. That when the president of the United States himself isn't even promoting his CNN town hall. The ratings were terrible. And we can tell even social media itself has moved on. And you know what the liberal spin is on this? This is kind of funny to me. The spin is, well, we didn't want a dramatic president who made a bunch of news. Really? You invest your time in a town hall with the president of the United States and he says nothing, you learn nothing. You're like, well, that's what we voted for. No, you voted against Donald Trump. You didn't vote for a president who wouldn't make news at all and tell you stuff. But that's what we've got. And now they got a spin for it. It's very, very bizarre. The whole thing is odd. You have an entire news network and it wants to dedicate itself to bashing Republicans. And it's not MSNBC, it's CNN. They have a town hall with the sitting president of the United States, and they've already moved on from it. So we will too. Hi there. The governor of the state of Georgia is going to join me at the bottom of this hour. I hope you guys are doing well. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I want to spend just one more brief moment on ratings. I know what my ratings are. and I'm quite proud of them. And I'm noticing a pattern. People generally are burned out on nonstop politics. And as sports has become political, people have stopped watching. As the news is all politics all the time, people are tuning out. You know, there's more to life than politics, and not everything is political. I used to do a podcast series. I probably need to bring it back where I just interviewed interesting people doing interesting things, and it wasn't politics. And I would interview a Democrat. I interviewed like David Axelrod, for example, who worked for President Obama. And we talked about life and his family and his family. They have a daughter with epilepsy and how they founded an epilepsy nonprofit. And it was a nice conversation. And maybe I need to start doing that again and just interviews with interesting people sort of thing, because people are burnt out on it. And you see it in ratings. You see it in the ratings in a lot of talk radio. You see it in the ratings for newscasts. You see it in the ratings for sports. In fact, when you survey people who've tuned out sports, it's not that they don't want to watch sports anymore. It's that they're trying to find sports that are no longer political. It's one reason I was so interested in the hockey season. And because the hockey, I had never really kept up with hockey. Philip works for me as a diehard Tampa Bay Lightning fan, and it's the only team he roots for that actually wins, and they actually won the Stanley Cup. And I was shocked, stunned at how patriotic it was and non-political it was. And in fact, the singer for the Tampa Bay Lightning is a Black lady veteran. She is in the hospital with COVID now, had the vaccine, but she's been hospitalized with COVID now. And there's an emotional investment in a story like that. And particularly, you've got a Black woman who is a veteran who is singing the Star Spangled Banner at the Tampa Bay Lightning games, and everyone is standing. There's nobody taking a knee. And you could tell that the interest in hockey has gone up as other sports like the NFL have gotten more and more political. People are just tired of politics all the time. It's one reason I do try to talk about other stuff. Well, I'm talking about TV ratings right now. We'll be talking about a news sites are being taken over by porn sites, which it's actually a very funny story that we will get to after our interview with Governor Kemp. But people are just tired of it. There's so much more to life than politics. And, you know, when you listen to people, particularly on the left now, theology has become political. Everything has become political because politics is the new God. And it's all about power. Power is really the new God. And you put your time, your talent, and your treasure towards acquiring power. And the right these days, conservatives, more and more, they're all about power, acquisition of power as well. We got to have power to stop the other side. The other side says we got to have power to stop the other side. And both sides want power. Very little public policy is getting changed, as both sides just want the power so that the other side can't have it. And everybody else is just exhausted by it and wants to move on. Not everything is political. I was talking to somebody last night. I don't have enough time to worry about which businesses I should boycott. Some people, I know progressives who keep apps on their phone. When they go to the grocery store, they can scan a UPC label, and this app will tell them whether or not that product gives to Republicans so they can avoid buying it. I'm like, I don't have enough time in my day for that. If somebody makes a good product, I don't care who they are. I'm willing to buy it if it's a good quality product. It's just not everything's political, y'all. All right, when we come back, the governor of the state of Georgia is going to join me. The Democrats have come to Georgia to attack him. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number 877-973-7425. Joining me by phone is the governor of the state of Georgia, Brian Kemp. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. You're great.
So I got a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about, but I want to start with the Democrats from Washington heading to Georgia. I was shocked to learn from the Georgia Democrats who participated that there had been super secret meetings to draft this election law that somehow they participated in, even though they were super secret meetings.
Yeah, it's really kind of comical. What they're doing and what their playbook is. I mean, they've had a playbook the whole time, even before they knew what was in the Elections Integrity Act, Senate Bill 202, that we passed. They labeled it Jim Crow 2.0 and started talking about suppression, even though we're adding early voting days on the weekend for any county that wants to participate in that. We put the voter ID requirement on absentee ballots by mail, and now you even have activists like Stacey Abrams that are supporting that when it's in Joe Manchin's bill, because most Georgians support it, most Americans support it. And then the roadshow that they did down here with Klobuchar and that other charade was really just because they couldn't pass the federal unconstitutional takeover of federal elections in D.C. with H.R. 1 and S. 1. But look, we're going to keep fighting. We're going to fight the DOJ lawsuit. I mean, they're using the Justice Department for political purposes. It's very sad, especially with the crime problem that we have in cities all across the country.
Yeah, well, I want to ask you about the crime situation first, but before I get there, you've got now, I mean, you've got the Justice Department saying they're essentially going to take over the lawsuit after, instead of letting Fair Fight do it, although there will be multiple competing lawsuits on the election law. But now we've got this 6-3 Supreme Court decision over the Arizona voting law that seems like they're going to have a very hard time getting the Georgia law thrown out of court.
Well, I don't think that matters to them, Eric. I mean, I think we have 6, 7, maybe even 8 lawsuits going on right now. So, you know, I don't think they really care whether they win or lose these lawsuits. They just use it for political purposes, and these groups are using it to, you know, pad Stacey Abrams' wallet more than they're already padded off of these billionaires giving them money to support the cause. But we're going to keep fighting them because the truth is on our side. It's easy to vote and hard to cheat in Georgia because of Senate Bill 202, and the Republicans are sticking together on this, and you know, the middle of the electorate is with us on this. Vast polling has shown that there's broad support for the legislation, especially the voter ID requirement and adding early voting days.
Yeah, definitely. It's surprising. Well, I guess it's not really surprising. It's just surprising the Democrats have finally paid attention that turns out black voters in Georgia and the rest of the nation actually do support photo ID like everyone else. The only people who don't are Democrats in Washington.
These voters, too, Eric, they don't appreciate people lying to them and telling them things that are not true in the bill. And that's what I've done on, you know, over 90 interviews now, is just answer any question anybody had about the bill and tell people the truth. You're not seeing that from the other side. They're saying things that are not true. When you have Joe Biden coming out, you know, saying that, you know, we're cutting early voting times and we're going to allow the state legislature to undo an election and take over a county elections department, all this other foolishness. I mean, it's crazy. Nobody, you know, that really is hurting their cause with their own voters.
Yeah, that's a good point. What's also hurting their cause is the crime wave across the country that I was humorously laughed at the mayor of Atlanta, who said the problem was Republican governors who let people out of lockdown inspired the crime wave. And she is now going to, in Atlanta, Georgia, have a new department to tackle crime, which I thought there was one called the police department, but apparently she wants a new one. And now there's going to be, it looks like, a special session of the Georgia legislature to actually deal with the issue.
Well, I would remind people, too, that the state of Colorado that has a Democratic governor opened the same time that we did. We were one of the first states in the country to methodically reopen the economy, but we weren't the only one. You had Colorado and Oklahoma in different ways, but they were doing the same thing that we were doing. And because we felt like we had to protect lives and livelihoods at that time, and it's turned out very well for our state. But, you know, listen, you know, people do not want politicians that's going to blame somebody else for the problems. They want politicians and leaders that are going to fix problems. And we've been working on this violent crime, going after street racing in Atlanta for over 3 months now. The numbers that we are stacking up, we're measuring what we're doing. You know, you can't argue with that. We've arrested over 100 people that had warrants outstanding, several of them. Well, we've arrested over 100 people that have outstanding warrants doing this, you know, crime suppression unit work we've done over the last 3 months. Some of them had warrants for murder. Other folks that were wanted for other reasons. We've taken stolen guns off. Hundreds of cars that we've impounded and drug arrests. You know, it's just, you know, putting boots on the ground, works. And that's what we need more of. And the locals have been participating in that. We certainly appreciate Chief Bryant and Atlanta Police Department. But, you know, they're having to ride with our troopers because they can't chase anybody. And it's hard to catch street racers when you can't chase them. And we've got Department of Natural Resources, helicopters, you know, GBI undercover people doing intel, helping with that, other local police agencies. And we're going to continue to do that because people are tired of, you know, their friends jogging down the sidewalk getting shot or pregnant women getting stabbed on sidewalks. And, you know, we're doing all we can from a state perspective, but we can't be a city's police department. You know, they got more officers right. than we do. They just need to support them and give them the resources they need. But they also need to turn them loose to do some police work. And I'm all for, you know, crime prevention tactics to help get kids, you know, not recruited into gangs and get them into after-school programs and sports programs and other extracurricular activities. But we've also got, you know, a bunch of these crimes that are being committed every day by a small amount of people, and we need to get them off the streets and lock them up.
Now, let me go back to something you said, because I had forgotten that this had happened in Atlanta, that the police can't engage in chases. So my wife and daughter were up in Atlanta. They stayed up there for a week at a hotel, the Georgia Tech Center Hotel, because Evelyn, our daughter, was at a camp. And Christy was telling me that every night, it seemed like around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, they woke up to loud cars racing on Spring Street, and never once was a police officer engaged. And they were just shocked that this was happening. And I had totally forgotten that the police in the city of Atlanta aren't allowed to pursue.
Well, that's really one reason we put the crime suppressing unit together, because people started sending me all these videos, and you would see a Atlanta police car, if they did respond, pull up, maybe even two of them. But as soon as they did, people would just get in a car and drive off, and you know, the Atlanta police couldn't go after them because of policy. Well, I got tired of that. You know, I got tired of streets being shut down and, you know, hundreds of people out there in the middle of public roadways blocking the roads. And I mean, it's dangerous. And I told Colonel Wright, I said, we're going to go after these people. And so we're chasing them. And we got somebody the other night hiding in the closet in their house because we tracked them with the helicopter, even though the patrol cars lost them. But we tracked the guy back to his house, went in there and yanked him out of the closet, and we locked him up. We're going to continue to do that. So, you know, people need to move their street racing to another state.
Yeah, that would be nice. Now, before you get off here, let me ask you real quick about state revenue, because I keep reading these stories that it looks like we're doing better than we thought we were going to be doing, even though we're now starting to deal with the fallouts from inflation and still having trouble finding people to get back to jobs. What are you hearing from the state economists on the lay of the land?
Well, revenues in our economy have just been incredible because of our measured reopening and us really fighting hard to, you know, protect lives against COVID, vaccinating the elderly and first responders and, you know, our healthcare heroes and teachers and other folks that were forward-facing first. I want to encourage people to continue to follow the science, talk to your doctor, and consider getting vaccinated. My family has been, and I think it's the right thing to do, but people got to get comfortable with that. But our economy's been so resilient. It's incredible. And even in, you know, areas like hospitality and service that were hit hard early on, we're starting to see that come back with a lot of people coming to Georgia to vacation and to spend their discretionary income here. Our sales taxes are awesome. Our corporate revenues are great. We're seeing more people on the roadway. So our, you know, transportation, you know, gas money that pays for roads and bridges is coming back very strong. So I'm very optimistic. It's going to give us some opportunities to do some generational type things with rural broadband and infrastructure, water and sewer, because we're not having to use ARP money to, you know, bail our state out, because we did reopen and we made cuts before all this happened to fund our priorities. And, you know, now we got to figure out what we're going to do in the future. And there'll be a lot of discussions about potential tax cuts, teacher pay raises, and other priorities that we have. And, you know, the speaker came out the other day and wants to double funding to the gang task force and the GBI, which I created. And I was in Augusta today for a huge announcement, 136 indictments against 77 Ghostface gangsters. So that policy is working with the federal, local, state partnership that we have going after street gangs and trying to keep our community safe. So we're looking forward to all those challenges ahead. It's a lot better than what we're seeing in states like New York, New Jersey, and California, that's for sure.
Definitely. Well, Governor, listen, thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule to stop by, and best of luck with the special session coming up, and hopefully we can solve some of the crime problems that Atlanta itself hasn't solved.
Yeah, that and redistricting. It ought to be interesting.
Yeah, I forgot. I don't even want to ask you about that one because I know the limited role you play, but yeah, that's going to dominate everybody.
It will. Well, have a great weekend. Thanks, Derek.
Thank you. Governor Brian Kemp, the governor of the state of Georgia. Folks, before I get out of here, I have heard a couple of feedback from you guys, and I wanted to bring you up to speed on our new advertiser because I really like them, and it looks like you guys are finding out how legit they are. It's Patriot Mobile. If you are tired of giving your money to wokes in corporate America, you need to go with Patriot Mobile. They are Christian. They're conservative. They're a cell phone carrier. And they use the same networks and towers that the other cell phone carriers have. So they've got nationwide coverage, and they give great discounts. They give really, really great benefits to those of you who use them. They also give a portion of all their proceeds to pro-life and veteran causes. Because they're Christian and they are conservative, they support the Second Amendment. They support pro-life. They support veterans. They support our military. Now, here's something you need to know is, on a very limited time, if you want to switch, if you want to move your contractor, you can even port your phone number. You can keep your phone number by going to Patriot Mobile. You'll get 50% off your first 2 months, $100 rather, off any phone in stock with a 1 year commitment. So you get either $50% off your first 2 months, 50% off, or you get $100 off your phone. Now, they have free premier activation, that's included. And they got plans to fit any budget. They get discounts for veterans and first responders, and they take care of multi-line users. You got a large family, they want to make it cost affordable for you to move to Patriot Mobile. Switching's easy. You go to patriotmobile.com/Eric, E-R-I-C-K, patriotmobile.com/Eric, or you can call them, 972-PATRIOT is the number, 972-PATRIOT, or patriotmobile.com/Eric. Hi there. How are you? Thanks to Governor Kemp for stopping by. I do believe that I figured out why his line dropped. I pushed a button on my phone and forgot that he actually called my cell phone, and I routed it through to the mixer, and then I pushed a button to start an update on my phone, having forgotten that. Didn't think I was supposed to do that, but oh well, we got it fixed very quickly. Somebody just left a comment on Instagram, and I'm being hijacked by my Instagram commenters, but that's okay because it's a Friday. You're allowed. You can also call in 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Benny on Instagram says, have you done a rant on people blocking traffic for Chick-fil-A yet? I feel that it would be better received from you than if I just started yelling at people. Y'all, I guess it is that time. We have a Chick-fil-A across the street from my neighborhood. I got a buddy of mine I actually went to dinner with last night who is, I'm hoping at some point I can get him here working for me. But in the meantime, he is working at Chick-fil-A, helping a friend of his who owns some Chick-fil-A's. And he was telling me about the traffic and the repeated patterns of people and the lines of people and how much food they're selling. And I got to tell you, at breakfast and at lunchtime in my neighborhood, there are traffic jams because of all the people trying to get into the Chick-fil-A. And it's all the people who want to go into the drive-thru because they don't want to get out of their car and go inside and pick up their food. And they're covering not just the parking lots, but they're backing up down the street. I mean, you don't even see this at a Starbucks. Now, Starbucks is crap coffee, but people go put these lines in at Starbucks and they wait for the baristas to make their coffee, and sometimes it backs up, but nothing like Chick-fil-A. We've got a double lane Chick-fil-A. Two lanes of traffic. And it backs up out of the Chick-fil-A parking lot through the little road. It shares an area with a local Publix grocery store, and then down the street. I mean, God bless Chick-fil-A and Jesus Chicken. I mean, people are coming for the chicken of Christ, and they love it. But those of us who have to deal with traffic, folks, listen. I know you think you're going to go get the cool wrap or the grilled chicken nuggets or even the grilled chicken sandwich, and you're thinking, I'm making a health conscious decision. But you know what? You can get the fried chicken sandwich. Just park your car, get your butt out of the car, and walk into the Chick-fil-A. You will burn calorie. It's called exercise. You don't have to sit in your car 5 miles from the drive-thru waiting for the line to move forward. And when you get there, your waffle fries are soggy and limp. You can actually park your car. There's this thing called a parking spot. You can park your car. You can leave your car. You can go inside. Or some Chick-fil-A's have curbside service. If you get the Chick-fil-A app, the Chick-fil-A app is the greatest fast food company app ever made. I can order in my driveway, back out of the driveway, go to the Chick-fil-A. It senses when I'm close and can begin the order. And then I pull up to a parking spot and it says, what number are you parked in? And I say, 1. Now my Chick-fil-A has 14 spots and they bring the order out to me. They do. They can do it for you too. You do not have to block traffic. You do not have to obstruct highway traffic waiting in the line that spills over from the drive-thrus. You can park and walk, and then you can get the cookie or the brownie. You can get the fried chicken sandwich instead of the grilled chicken sandwich because you've exercised on your way into the Chick-fil-A to get the food instead of keeping your butt parked in the car, tying up traffic for the rest of us. It's just a suggestion. It's just a suggestion. I do not judge. It's just a suggestion. But you would make everyone's life easier. That's all I'm going to say. Now, we've got a caller who wants to chime in on this, and I got to go to commercial break here in like 20 seconds. So caller, Van, stick around because we may carry this conversation. Why not? It's Open Line Friday. You can call into 877-973-7425. We can talk about our backup line pet peeves.